This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez, CHI,
1720 WGN.
Some people see the revolution, but most only see the girl. I can lose my hard-earned freedom if my fear defines my world. I declare my independence from the critics and the stones. I can find my revolution. I can learn to stand alone.
It is, what night is this? John Tate is on his way up, which means it must be Tuesday. See how I can work that. It is. Thank you very much, Vivian. Vivian Lanou, our producer this evening, and she'll be answering your calls, texts, running the show, and hanging out with us in general on the Patty Vasquez Show.
Yes, everybody be nice.
Everyone. It's so sad that we even have to say that part of it. So I know that Tatey's going to be joining us soon. We've got the CEO of Day One Pact, an organization that you want to know more about, and we want to hear about some developments that have turned up in the last 6 months since we last spoke to our good friend Steve Boise. And we also are going to have, I think we're going to hear from Senator Dan Katowski, who happens to be on his way to Springfield. The General Assembly is wrapping up their spring session, a lot of things going on. We want to find out why he's headed down there, but there are a lot of issues on the table, and hopefully I'll be able to head down to Springfield next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday and give you at least a broadcast one night and give you an idea of how things look when it comes to the budget, our spending on infrastructure improvements. I know a lot of people are wondering about recreational marijuana. There's also the fair tax. There's a lot going on down there. I don't know how much they are going to accomplish. As one of our friends of the show, Representative Batnick, said that the General Assembly has five big airplanes to land, and they're not entirely sure which ones they're going to land, if all of them. Joining us in studio, of course, because it's Tuesday, not because, it's also because we love him, John Tatey, the host of Pop Mom Podcast and a regular contributor to WGN Radio. And it is a weird night out tonight. It's feeling downright autumnal out there.
I saw someone's hat fly off coming in, which I usually only see in the cartoons.
Is it that windy outside?
It's that windy down there.
You know what's blowing in? The warm weather. It's supposed to be 80 degrees tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is very confusing.
Is it going to be humid?
I don't know. Hey, I'll take. I want my. Okay, I'm greedy.
I'll listen to the weather during the news break.
No, I'm saying I'll take my 80 degrees, but now that I think about it, you're right. What I want is the in-between stages. I want... It's okay. We do have the loudest microphone
the
arms in the business.
Boom. Yeah.
It's okay. Well, it reminds me of being at the old studio. That used to be the arm over the big board, I think, or at least we had one like that. But I've needed a stretch. I'm greedy when it comes to the kind of weather I like having. I would love to have a stretch of 60 degree and 70 degree weather, but apparently we get to have one day of 70, one day of 40.
We've just got little nibbles.
And sometimes we get 80, and then we get 40 and 50. And I'll take rain, though. The flowers are starting to bloom finally because they're very confused with our weather.
Well, it was so confused that over the weekend they were forecasting, like, did you see the forecast that we were supposed to have like an 87 degree day? And then it never quite cracked 70. So even the weathermen and women, the meteorologists, did not know what was going on either.
Well, and then there was this idea that we might have days and days of storm as well. Did you see that?
Like, yeah.
They thought we were going to have these massive storms starting on Friday, going all the way through Wednesday. Some rain on Saturday. And then,
I guess it was a chaotic stretch here for the Midwest. I mean, we're certainly lucky in the respect that we're not facing disaster right now.
Well,
as the lower Midwest is.
There were like a whole bunch of tornadoes.
Tornadoes in Oklahoma, Texas.
Man, now what was the most significant aggressive weather that you would say New Hampshire? Would you say winters, like blizzards? What's, you know, here we in Illinois, in the Midwest, we have our tornadoes. Chicago, you know, for some reason we've been lucky, although Skilling says it's not a matter of if, but when we have a tornado in this area. But
oh, really?
What is your dramatic, scary weather in New Hampshire?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. When I was about to move to Chicago a number of years ago now, everybody said the same thing. They said, oh, but the winters, the cold and the winters. And I said, I grew up in New Hampshire. I know from cold.
Right.
But in New Hampshire, we'll get a lot of snow and it'll be very cold. But there's something about the countryside it's just not as brutal. Like, in the city is hard edges and black roads, and I just feel like the wind comes over that, and it just bites you.
Right.
But New Hampshire, there's trees everywhere, there's hills, there's mountains. It can't get too aggressive.
It's a charming weather front.
It's a charming breeze. It's a weather that comes up against the landscape, and the landscape tames the weather a little bit, I guess I'll say. Okay. So, yes, I was shocked by the cold when I came to Chicago because it's city cold, and it's unrelenting.
Yeah, I get, and then it does when that snow turns to black, like the slush and the sludge. Because there are days when the snow is picturesque.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you can just stay inside. And
you're talking about snow now. We have come full circle.
Well, I told someone the other day. I almost put my shovel away, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna, just in case. I'm not going to be comfortable in Chicago until we hit maybe mid-June. I don't think that's ever happened. But we have to. When was the latest snowfall in Chicago? I wonder what that record is, because getting into, what are we, in the low 40s right now? I don't know. It's chilling.
You know, a couple of times we've talked to your friend at the National Weather Service outpost near here. We should find out from when we're going to get a stretch.
When we're going to stretch.
That's what you're looking for, a stretch, right?
Yeah. Well, tomorrow, it's tomorrow, Wednesday, 78 degrees, partly sunny and warmer tomorrow. I know the weather comes up in just a little bit, but for those who are wondering, it's supposed to be partly in the Chicagoland area. I don't necessarily know what the weather will be like near you, but the problem is, and Vivian, you know, you've lived in places that are significantly warmer more lengths of time in the year, right? For more days.
Yes.
At a time. So how did you, from living in Greece, I know you were little
Greece.
When you moved here. Yes,
yeah,
you lived in
I was living there for 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah, she's a little girl in Athens. And I can't imagine coming here. Like, you think you're going to this big, great city, you're going to America, and you're like, what?
Yeah, my mom and dad did not warn me. They did not.
How do you mentally prepare an 8-year-old?
Seriously, like 8 feet of snow.
Oh. It's not that bad. Michigan is 8 feet of snow.
I over-exaggerate. I'm sorry.
It just felt like it when you came here.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. Interestingly to me, I realized tonight, I think it was about 50 when I was getting in. If this was March, we'd be like, oh, this is balmy. This is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that's right.
Part of it is psychological, because you know it's supposed to be nicer.
Yeah.
You know, almost the worst part of winter is this sort of March to May stretch, when you're just like, you're done. You're done with winter. And you're like, okay, ready. That's when you're in the worst. You talk about psychology. That's the worst psychological point to be in. It's just like, okay, I'm ready. I put my winter coat in the closet. Here we go. And you step outside, and it's just like, nope, we're going to punch you in the face a little more.
Right.
With some wind chill.
That's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah.
When you just give me a wind chill in May, that makes me sad.
We're psychoanalyzing the whole populace of Chicago.
Yeah, well, and there are others who, I'm sure, I can't believe you're just talking about the weather. Well, we'll talk about Game of Thrones probably coming up in a little bit. We're going to check in with the... I'm sending Vivian Senator Katowski's number, because I told him we'd call him at a quarter till. He's heading down to Springfield, and I want to know what's going on. Well, and he's got some important issues that he's trying to tackle down there. So I'm sending this to Vivian to call him in like 3 or 4 minutes. I'm doing an on-air production meeting.
Awesome.
I never sent her down tonight.
Well, you know, I made it here, but just by the seat of my pants. So I'm catching up too.
Well,
I have some questions for Senator Katowski.
Oh, excellent.
Can I talk to him too?
Yeah, he's no longer a senator. You address somebody by the last highest political office title they held.
Mm-hmm.
He is now the president and CEO of ChildServe, but still working closely with Springfield, trying to make sure that the reason he left, which was to help people in a fundamental way, that they are still thinking of the kids in places and communities throughout the state of Illinois who need it the most.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
I really don't believe in continuing to attach the title.
The senator?
I think it's a really strange convention of the American press that we
let's
do.
Let's talk
that.
About that then.
Okay.
Well, I seem to be the only, we'll have to ask him this, but I feel as though I might be the only person in his life
who still calls him senator.
But
when you're in the habit of it after years of talking to him on the radio, it's tough to shake.
Yes. I have a lot of friends who are representatives, which is much clunkier when you try to call someone representative.
Yes.
So obviously you have, you know, your rep Sarah's, your rep, you know, your rep Stephanie's, rep Matt's. I realize I should probably call them by their last names now that I'm saying it out loud. Feigenholtz, Batnick, and Kifowit. So, but yes, I...
Feigenholtz, Batnick, and Kifowit. Wow. Now, like, there's a law firm for
you. That or, you know, maybe it's kind of like a Tinker's Ever's a Chance situation.
Yeah. There you go.
But we are going to check in with him. We had an event last week, and I was so proud of being able to share comedians who I've admired since the day I started doing stand-up comedy. That was Dwayne Kennedy, who you might recognize from Kamau Bell's first show, which was on FX. I can't remember the name of it, but I think it was like Black Sheep was the commercial that mm-hmm. they always ran. And then now he's got the United Shades of America on CNN, and they do some great work. So we had Dwayne Kennedy, who in his own right is one of the best stand-up comics around, and Rocky Laporte, who is they're both fall down funny for me, and really from two incredibly different backgrounds and their perspective. Of course, every comic is, but I got to, you know, they asked me to help put this show together, and I said, I think I got it. I got these guys to agree to a price that, because, you know, you still have to take care of
their
the comics.
Professionals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they did it for a significantly lower price than I know they do for any other
show.
What
was the show?
It was at the Greenhouse Theater. It was Stand Up for Kids, and it was a fundraiser for the organization that Senator Katowski is the president of, and for ChildServe. It was wonderful, and I just had so much fun. I don't get to work with my peers very often. You know, obviously here, like I had lunch with Steve
Cochran. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, I never get to see my peers. And that's why every time, and speaking of which, there's a comedian named Bill Gorgo who is such a champion of comedy. But every few weeks he has a writer's circle at his home. And we go to his basement, which sounds weird, but we go to his basement, but it's a warm nook of comedy. You look around the walls and every shelf is stacked high with all these comedy books. You know, from all the generations of comedy going all the way back. I'm guessing he even has ones about, you know, the court jester. You know, you see like Jack Benny, you see Woody Allen, you see Joan Rivers' book, everyone's books, and how to do comedy, you know, whether it's Jean Perrette or Judy Collins. Judy Collins? I can't remember. Judy somebody writes comedy books. Anyway.
Yeah. And comedy Bible you're talking about. Right. Yeah.
And we sit around, about six to eight of us sit around a table, and you basically, it's your turn, and whatever material, like basically I'll throw out a premise, and I'll say, you know, I rang my neighbor's doorbell to let him know the street, and I, just this story of it, I rang my neighbor's doorbell to let him know the street cleaners were coming back around, and he had already moved his car, and I wanted to let him know that they were coming back around so he could move it and give him an opportunity to continue cleaning the street, and maybe he wouldn't get a ticket because the violation hours were still up. So I ring his doorbell, and I can't say it on the air, but he opened the door. Before I said anything, he said, "Go F yourself." And I couldn't move because I didn't understand what, you know. I went home and I looked in the mirror. I'm like, what was there something written on my face that maybe it was a secret message that I didn't know? Or, yeah. So I was having these guys.
This is your neighbor?
This is my neighbor down the street. It was my neighbor down the street. Yes.
And someone you don't know, I assume.
No, but interestingly enough, I mean, for a long time, I had so much rage about this guy. But he is so nice to Declan when he sees Declan. I don't know if he associates that day or even remembers what happened. He is so sweet when he sees Declan that he's, you know, melted my heart, and I'm fine, whatever. He had a bad day. Who knows what he was in the middle of? So anyway, I throw that premise out, and the guys, you know, they start running with it and have different ideas of what directions it could go in, sort of this bigger thing, and that's just like, you know, I don't have the notes in front of me. But anyway, you throw out a premise, this would happen to me. And some days we go on and on and just laugh about, like last time they were laughing at my family. Because I was trying to ask them, I'm like, do you guys think it's okay for me to say I'm an only child, even though I have six half siblings? Because they're all much older and I grew up by myself. And they're like, what do you mean you have six half siblings? So I tried explaining to them my family, and they just were making fun of the whole thing. So it was.
That sounds fun.
It's amazing, and it makes me excited.
A basement full of comedy fun.
Oh, we were thinking about videotaping.
You need that. You need that thing that makes you excited to be a comic.
Yes.
I see eyes darting. I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Katowski.
Is Senator Katowski on the line? For some reason,
he's on the line. We're just trying to find a better connection.
Oh, does it not sound good?
Yeah, it's a little scratchy.
Oh, it's too scratchy? Is he? I thought he sounded okay when I talked to him earlier, but maybe he's driving to Springfield, so he might be in a different cell. So maybe he's trying to find some place he can talk to us.
Yeah.
So
in the meantime, can I loop back to the street cleaning thing for a second?
Yes.
Does it upset your OCD when the street cleaner has to go around that
car?
One car that forgot to move? That drives me crazy.
Yep. Especially if they might be over a grate, like for the drains in the street, because we have a lot of flooding in our neighborhood. So when those streets start to fill up and the water has nowhere to go.
Oh, good point. Now you've made me even more itchy about it.
Yeah, you got to move your cars.
But I always wonder if the guy in the street cleaning vehicle, if it upsets him, too.
I think he likes taking target practice, like see how close he can come to the car and drive around.
They come really close.
They hug that pretty good, don't they?
Yep.
Yeah, they're like, I'm going to get the spot right by your side view mirror. We've been talking about Senator Katowski. Before we get into why you're driving down to Springfield, Senator, I have John Tatey in the studio with me tonight.
Hey, John.
Hello, Mr. Senator. Hi, Mr. I don't know how to address it.
Well, so, Senator, I was explaining.
Just call me Dan. Just call me Dan.
Well, okay, you told me it's respectful to call you Senator. Why do you make me call you Senator and everybody else?
Jeez. So you make me.
No, I'm teasing.
That's not how it happened. That made me sound like I'm really a humble guy. No.
I had asked you about it, but the way
asked me, she said, "How do you refer to you?" And like I said, "Well, the protocol is you refer to as your last highest office that you held." But I said you can do whatever you want. And Patty was like, "Okay, I'll just call you Senator." I was like, "Whatever, do whatever you want." But John, my name is Dan. It's very nice to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing
Hope
well,
you're having
Dan.
A good evening.
Congratulations on this event that you had with Patty. It sounds wonderful.
Thank you. It was awesome. The comedians were fantastic, and it was a terrific crowd. And we raised close to $25,000 for our organization, which is called ChildServe, which is dedicated to building better lives for kids so they can reach their full potential. And it was just a wonderful evening. And Patty has been so great to host events and to get people together who are just incredibly talented and funny. And just to be able to, because our jobs, the people who do the frontline work to help keep kids safe who have endured abuse and neglect and trauma, it's very challenging work. And sometimes just, as we talked about that night, humor can be healing. And laughter can be very good medicine, especially when, we've had a tough couple of months with making sure we're, because the job is really difficult. And we have kids who are, they're living in very tough neighborhoods and difficult environments. And we think that we do our best to keep kids safe. And we've had a couple of kids who've been shot and killed. One was shot in front of his friend's house. Another was just, in a neighborhood. And another was shot in a... basically on a street corner in his car, taking his girlfriend out. And so there's a lot of violence out there. And no matter what we're doing in order to keep kids safe, we're trying to get them in good foster homes and making sure they have an opportunity to live a long, productive, and healthy life. They're still facing, the consequences of the fact that we have not done enough as a country, as a state, as a city, to make sure that the needs and the safety of kids are placed above everything else. And we need to do a better job of ensuring their security because, quite frankly, you can control for only so many things, right? You can get great people involved. We have caseworkers, case managers who devote their lives. They're passionate, mission-driven people, and they're doing their best to make sure that these kids have every opportunity to live a long and productive life. And they're, these people with master's degrees, they work for between $35,000 and $40,000 a year, and they essentially are working nonstop, and they can never turn off what they're doing. They're always on call, and because they're kids, and kids have challenges, and they have to go to court, or they need to go to pick up a child from an emergency room, or in some cases, they go to a morgue to provide support for a family who's, unfortunately, a child has lost their life. So our case managers are just like doctors and parents, and it's exceedingly difficult work, so... nights like our comedy night are just moments where people can kind of sit back and try and laugh and have a nice time. And the type of comedians that Patty brought to that evening were just, they're excellent at what they do. And the professionals and the people there left feeling better about themselves in that night just because they were just able to laugh.
It was amazing when I was standing there and about to bring up Rocky Laporte. I thought, I mean, I brought in comics that have appeared on Leno and Letterman, have been in movies and television. I mean, Dwayne is has been a writer and appeared in movies all the way back to PCU. Do you remember PC University?
Yeah,
he's in that. Like, I mean, I only gave their most recent. Oh yeah, I only gave you the most recent credits. That was what they had asked me to say. But they have illustrious, incredible careers, and I was almost giddy and overwhelmed by what I was able to, you know, that I share the stage with them. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's just such a gift for our organization and for the kids and families who are in our care, who are working with on a daily basis. Because when you have an event like that, it's we're able to bring in much-needed resources and, you know, help kids who are living in poverty, who suffer through trauma related to, in many cases, horrific acts of violence and sexual abuse and physical abuse, or just neglect, or the fact that their parents aren't involved in their lives due to substance abuse, mental health problems, or the fact that they're dealing with economic issues. It's just to be able to provide that support, that infusion of resources into our organization to help our kids is an absolute blessing.
Well, Dan, so let me ask you about the morale piece, because this is such challenging work, and as you said, you know, it sounds like you're on all the time. It's present in your mind all the time. How do you and the people who work with you not get burnt out?
Well, that's the greatest challenge it faces. Our case managers, our youth care workers, it's exceedingly high burnout rates. I mean, our turnover rate, if you can believe this, is close to 50% in that job. Mm. And that means kids who've already dealt with a lot of instability in their own lives because they've been removed from the custody of their families because of some kind of trauma, face additional trauma, it's insult to injury, because they'll get attached to a caseworker or a youth care worker, and this caseworker will end up leaving because they're overwhelmed and they're burned out and they're struggling because they love their job and they're passionate about the work and they're all in with their heart. And so many of them, and that's why I'm going down to Springfield, because literally for 17 years, the state has not provided adequate, sufficient funding for people who are case managers. We each have a caseload of 15 kids to be able to do their job as effectively as it can be done. And because of that, investment has not occurred to the extent that it should. Organizations like mine have to borrow millions from banks to be able to subsidize the fact that the state hasn't provided the support necessary for people to just do the work that they were hired to do by the state. And that's a really big challenge. So, you know, caseworkers see that. There they come in and they're trained and they work with kids. They have a caseload of 15. But then there's this high turnover due to being overwhelmed, due to the fact that they're burnt out, and also due to the fact that they want to go to other jobs. It's just like, you know what, if I go to another job, I'm not going to be on call, you know, 24/7.
Right.
I'm going to go, like, I'll go work in early childhood, or I'll go work at a hospital, or I'll go work for a managed care organization, or I'll do this and that. And what many people don't really appreciate and recognize is the work that people do. They don't get into this field because it's a lucrative field. They go in this field because they're passionate, mission-driven, caring, spiritual people who really want to make a difference in the lives of children. And then what they encounter is like, oh, not only is the job really difficult and challenging, but they see, it's very debilitating when you see over years, if you look at this, the cost of inflation has gone up in the state of Illinois. It's gone up over 17 years, like 43%. The amount of money that has been received by organizations like ours to offset that 43% is 5%. So it's like 38%, like a 38% cut. And really, kids are not getting the support they need in order for them to be safe, in order for them to be secure, in order for them to be protected. I mean, literally, children are dying. Kids are being buried in shallow graves, right? Kids are being shot at in broad daylight. And we need to really send a clear message, draw a line in the sand, that we value the lives of children, regardless of where they live and what they look like. Because, I mean, what you end up seeing is, because we are not addressing this head on at the beginning stages, kids end up, like, as they get older, because we haven't addressed their challenges, they end up having bigger problems. And they're very complex and they're very deep. and they end up in some cases being intractable. But this is really such a crucial, critical moment in the state of Illinois, and we need to really ask for the governor and for legislators to really step up and put the investment in the budget, the resources necessary, so case managers are working with kids. I mean, there's 17,000 kids in care. 17,000 kids. Wow. And literally, if you think about this, there's 17,000 kids in care, and all of these kids have a case manager, right? All of them do. And if those case managers have a turnover rate of 50%, you're thinking that, oh, my God, we're supposed to be a stabilizing force in kids' life. And if we do not provide investment, we are just adding insult to injury. And we're doing the best that we can with the resources we have. And that's why that fundraiser that Patty was a part of, and Dwayne and Rocky, is so important, because it helps in a very small and important way to make a difference and to offset that lack of investment that's occurred over the past 17 years.
Well, Senator, we wish you a safe trip, and we'd love to check in with you and see how things are going. And we'll also let people know about the fundraiser coming up in June at the Hebetler Bowling Alley, which is on June 21st. And we look forward to having a great time with everybody there as well. So go to childserve.org for more information. That's childserv. Leave the E off because their work isn't done. .org. Senator, have a very safe evening.
Well, can I thank the Speaker of the House for WGN Radio, Patty Vasquez, and then Prime Minister John? Can I thank Prime Minister John? Thank you.
There you go. We all have titles. I like
I accept.
It. I'll take it. Be well. Be well,
take
sir.
Care.
Thank you. Thank you. It's time now for our news. When we come back, Vivian was surprised to learn there are people across the country who are seeking therapy now that Game of Thrones is over. They don't know what to look for.
Yeah, I was very surprised.
Yeah, true story. So let's talk about that one. Maybe, I don't know if it's because of how it ended or because it ended, but we shall discuss in just a
little
bit.
Can't wait. Yeah. To share my little knowledge on GOT.
We're going to talk more about the phenomenon, I think, more than anything else. And John doesn't want to talk about it, so we'll just make him. It is Tuesday night, and I know that in part because a very good friend and contributor to the Patty Vasquez Show is John Tatey hanging out with us. I love when you're on, just in general for you, but I also like finding new things to enjoy, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. Vivian and I texted briefly earlier when I told her that there are folks who are struggling now that the Game of Thrones is over, and it's a combination, it seems, as though because over the course of, is it 8 years?
Yeah.
They've developed this, not just a personal attachment to how this story plays out. You know, I've tried. You know, I tried over and over again to get involved and watch the show. And I don't mind being part of being on a wagon. You know, and I'll jump up there, and I don't care how bouncy the ride is. But at some point, you go,
that's
we're not
brave
going
of you.
Anywhere. Yeah, I'm gonna get off at the next stop. So I think I made it through maybe half of the first episode.
That's what I recall. Yeah. I think that's your track.
It's so funny because you watched the first episode and I watched the last one.
Oh, you did?
And you know what's funny? It was on HBO and I saw the scene where Jon Snow is his name, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He killed the queen.
Okay.
Khaleesi is her name?
I don't know if I'm going to say spoiler alert.
It's a mild spoiler
alert. Oh, my God. Did I just ruin that for people?
You did.
Did she really?
She did.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was a biggie.
Oh, was it? I don't know.
But it's over. People that were watching it, they should have
been waiting for
I'm sure nobody will be angry that you did that because, yes. It
guys, it's over, though. People, I mean, there are memes about it. I did not ruin it for people.
Keep telling the public.
She's just reading the memes. I don't know. I would be like her. I'd be like, I don't know, something with the... I do have to say one of my favorite things to read about, though, since I'm not familiar with the show, is reading about the woman who ascends to the wardrobe of one of the characters that implements all the different parts of her family, I guess. And that was fascinating to me.
Really?
Yeah, you should look at the wardrobe designer. There's like something that was like a crown on one guy is actually now a belt. Oh, like a maybe it's on her neck. Like the show, there's various elements of other characters that maybe have passed, you know, been killed since, or that she's. It's just really it was an interesting sort of insight into the show and those sort of very deliberate choices they make. But it sounds as though people are very not happy with their deliberate choices toward the end.
Well, You know, part of the problem, Patty, is that these shows are so character driven. Mm-hmm. And when the show runs like a top, and Lost was kind of a similar situation where they were telling the stories of these characters and they really let the characters inform the writing process. They wrote the show as they went along. And Game of Thrones, even though it was working from a template laid out by George R.R. Martin, who wrote the books, he wrote the books the same way. They're even structured. Each chapter is headed with a different character's name. It's all very character-driven. And that's great when you're expanding the world and when the story is sprawling out. But when you need to bring things back down to a resolution, you have to make the characters do things that are work more to advance the story or to wrap the story up than necessarily is true to the deep, complex personality you've built up. So I understand people's complaints about this season because it was necessarily functional. It had to bring the story to some end, and I understand people aren't necessarily satisfied by all of the ends to which the story was brought,
right,
or maybe loose ends that weren't tied up, but they had a job to get done, so it really couldn't be that exploratory, rich, complex exploration of character just because they had to wrap it up. And I don't know that there's any particularly satisfying way that they could have done that because the show had to behave differently toward the end, again, just to get this job
done. For the sake of wrapping up a story,
yeah,
on television.
Yeah.
And also the constraints of what that means to film. And there were a lot of, but there were a lot of bumps along the way this year, whether it was the darkness of the one and the coffee cup.
The coffee cup. And there was a bottle of water in the finale.
How did they not go through every frame of the last episode they have and go, we better have this all straightened out now that
they're tired. 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kidding.
It's tough to go up against millions of people who are all scouring the screen and your staff of maybe dozens who could possibly have time to look for that stuff. I feel for them.
I know. So there are various places.
Stuff.
Yeah. So for 8 years of getting emotionally attached to the world of Westeros,
yeah,
Game of Thrones, mm-hmm, it's time to say your final goodbyes. Don't know how to cope with a series coming to an end? You are not alone. There are websites where you can type in your postal code to find a counselor near you who are specialized to help you deal with everything from Cleganebowl and the showrunner's writing decisions to general GOT emptiness. You can also specify if you prefer to discuss your grief, confusion, or anger via Skype, phone, or face-to-face.
I'm sorry. That's just happening. Crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Professionals will help you digest your feelings and your interpretation of the show, which could range from anger and confusion to sadness and grief. The service description reads, most importantly, the counselors will be on hand to guide fans on how to move on after almost a decade of fandom.
I love how your pitch changed when you did that.
I just want you to know we're all going to get through this together. As counselors will admit, it's actually not unusual for fans to get emotionally attached to television and movie storylines.
You know, there was a show that I loved in the 80s called Sledgehammer. It was this sort of Dirty Harry satire. I don't exactly know what got me into it in the first place, but it was this ABC satire show, and every week I would look in the TV guide for it, and one week it just wasn't there, and I realized that it wasn't coming back, and I cried and cried.
Oh.
But because I was 5. Okay.
Poor little John. Well, maybe because you had to deal with it at an earlier age. Maybe some of these folks.
So the trauma is new for these people.
Yeah, maybe they've never.
TV show being canceled.
Yes.
Yeah.
They've never had that emotion. Because here, we watch these shows to escape our daily lives and immerse ourselves into the unknown. This is the very reason why we sometimes become addicted to watching them. The stories they tell become part of our identity.
Addicted? That's a strong word.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Let me see if I can find the website. So you can go to, I don't know why it's called bark.com, but it's called bark.com. Are you distraught by the thought of Game of Thrones ending? Yeah. So there you go. Go to bark.com. You can put in your, I wonder if it's like, I'm being lured into a hoax. Hold on. Let me see.
Is this real?
Hey, you know what? every single day. I wake up and go, is this real? For different reasons, though. More after this on 720 WGN.
They're Chicago and they're real. Watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash, and Robin Baumgarten. Get real in the morning. Did I make a mistake? Get real in the morning with the WGN-TV Morning News Team. Weekdays 4 to 10.
I just think you sounded very formal. I liked it.
Oh, okay. I was potash, concentrating so potash, hard on the
maybe potash.
Names. Is it potash?
It might be, I think it's potash. That's
okay. I'm so sorry, Larry.
I saw Paul Conrad.
I had a pronounce for Dan Ponce, but rest of them.
But no phonetic spelling. Yeah. How does it, would it say P-O-N-S-A-Y for Ponce?
It says Ponce,
Ponce.
Actually.
That's right. Which,
is that right?
Yeah, Ponce.
Oh, I've been wrong for years now. I thought I knew Dan's name.
It's not the first time it's happened to him. It's happened
before. Well, you know what? Nobody gets my name right, so I guess I don't feel that bad.
I feel like I've gotten it right since
then. Well, you get it right.
Gosh, I hope so at this point. Game of Thrones therapy sessions are a real thing. But Bill has a question. Bill, what is your question about Game of Thrones and people seeking out therapy to deal with it? Yes.
You know, my theory is, don't people realize these shows are fictional?
I know.
I mean, they're all fictional. So every TV show is fictional unless you find some documentary on TV or something. But, I mean, I don't get it, how people can get so involved in a show like that.
I do.
To me, it's just senseless. The people, in other words, you don't have a very good mental stability yourself. If you get so involved in one of those shows, you go,
well,
that's right.
Go Bill, to therapy to the end of to well, get that, it straightened
that,
out.
That is one of the points of the article, is that people do use it as escapism for whatever reason that is. So maybe there's other stress in your life, and that's helping you get through it. And once that, because I know that when my father was sick, my father was diagnosed with small cell lung cancer in 2000. And I had never really paid attention much to the series Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I was just looking around for something to just distract, because I was working, you know, I was with my dad. Sometimes he would have chemo for up to 6 hours because it was very aggressive. He was stage 4. And I started watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I enjoyed it. And that was probably, Bill, when I started doing cosplay. You know, cosplay is dressing up like your favorite characters. And most, I started I really only dress up as Buffy for Halloween 1 year, but it was fun to be a blonde and wear a short skirt and boots and carry around a big, you know.
Well, yeah, I can see that, but I meant if you didn't get so involved, you had to go to psychiatric treatment or go see some psychiatrist.
Well, Bill, I
could have used it for a lot of reasons. It could also be an indication of needing some help getting through other things, other stress in your life too. It could be. But Bill,
it could be. But Bill, I like your point of view. So, will you counsel? Let's do a little role play right here, okay? I'm suffering after the Game of Thrones finale, and I want you to counsel me, all right, Bill? I can't function. Game of Thrones is over. What do I do with myself?
I find you some other interest. I mean, there's plenty of things to do other than just watch some TV show. There's plenty of things. I mean, get yourself interested in something else. Go help someone or get involved with volunteering somewhere, doing something just to get your mind off of it. Bodies are that bad.
That's pretty
answer,
good.
Bill. That was great.
We were both very happy with that. We were like, wow, that sounds good.
That's great.
Hold on.
I just don't get it. I mean, I know people that's involved in that Game of Thrones, and it's like, come on, you got to be out of your mind.
I'm trying to find a good sound effect for we're very happy with that answer. I think that's a good idea. All I have is no. How about, this is the best I can do. I'm sorry. Hold on a second. That's all I got is the horn at Arlington Park race.
Get involved in something else. I mean, you know, there's plenty of things out here to worry about more than some goofy TV show. I mean, it's like it's entertainment. I mean, even like people I know that get so involved in these movies sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like come out of the movie crying and all that kind of stuff. It's just a movie.
Oh, I love having a good cry at a movie.
Some people get involved in those movies where it's just like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Wow, Bill. I mean, if I were counseling,
I don't know what it is, but
Bill, if I were counseling you, Bill, I would you know, leave a little room of understanding for the folks who are taking this hard and listen with love. But I do actually like your suggestion of find something where you can help somebody else.
Help people. Help people.
And real quick, just kind of change the subject. The senator you had on.
Yes.
I agree with him. There is a big turnover in that field.
Yes.
But I know several people work in that field, and they burn out because people don't realize, like he says, that field, you're on duty 24 hours a day.
We're talking about the safety. Yeah, there's 17,000 kids in the state of Illinois who are under care by the state.
Right, right. Yeah. If you stop and think, you make, say you get paid $40,000 a year. Did you ever stop and figure that out, what you make an hour when you're on duty 24 hours a day?
Right.
I haven't figured out, probably about 20 cents an hour.
It's unfathomable. And there are... Yeah, I appreciate that, Bill. What neighborhood do you live in, Bill?
I live on the southeast side.
I like how Bill...
I've lived in the same house since 1964.
You did? What neighborhood did you move from to the southeast side?
Well, when I was first married, I lived at Grandin Wabash.
Grandin Wabash.
On the northwest corner of the apartment building there. I don't know what's there now. Some stores and stuff. They tore it down.
Yeah.
I lived there for 3 years, and then I moved out here. It's actually in the Chatham area where I'm at.
Oh, Chatham. And how has the neighborhood changed around you since you moved there in the 60s?
Oh, it's changed all different ways.
Yeah.
I mean, it went from, when I moved out here, it was pretty well mixed neighborhood. Then it kind of went the other way. And then it went pretty much the neighborhood kind of went toward Elijah Muhammad's group.
Okay.
Which at that time, I'll tell you, the neighborhood was really, really safe.
Okay.
Because they didn't play around. they had their security walked around all the time.
Huh.
And so and it changed. But you know, let's put it this way. There's no neighborhood in the city of Chicago that you classify as safe.
I agree.
I don't care where you live.
Mm-hmm.
There's no neighborhood. You can live on the Gold Coast. You can live anywhere, and there's no neighborhood that's safe.
Gotcha.
And if people can think that, sure, just like me, I don't worry about it. But, I mean, I go out here all the time. I've lived here, like I said, since 64. And I've ridden the IC, I rode the CTA, I read the red line. And, in fact, I've talked to you before. I'm the one that's, I'm busy handicapped, so I never worry about it.
Right.
I never had a problem out here. Hmm. I mean, I've got... all kinds of people are friends. I mean, you know, I've had street people to well-to-do people in the area and everything else. I mean, I never worried about it. So it all depends on how you go about your life and how you treat the other person. If you walk down the street and you see some guy that's homeless or some woman even that's homeless, and you kind of just say, kick them to the side, get them away, don't bother me. And naturally, after a while, it gets to them, and they're going to retaliate against the people. So, you know, it's just, you treat a person just like it's a human being. I mean, they're a human being. It's just, so what? Maybe some people just due to a mental capacity, or some people just physically can't. Or, of course, you get the people that really don't want to work or do anything. Well, you just have to. You have to look at them at one way or the other, and you have to look at them and say, well, they're human. You know, it could be right now, you got a good job. The guy with you, which is John, he's got a good job. And I worked for, I'm retired now, but I worked for 50 and a half years at the same place. I had a good job. But every day, you don't know, you may be on that street tomorrow.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right. Good things can happen.
You're not exempt.
No. None of us
are. You could be on the street tomorrow, because the way things are going now, who knows? We all might be on the street by tomorrow.
Well,
Bill, I just want to say I appreciate that, because it's one thing that I think we often forget in the political discussions in this country, that bad things can happen to good people, and there is such a thing as bad luck, and society's job is to take up that slack.
Yep.
Right. Well, look at all these people. Just take, for example, look at the stock market.
Right.
It's been going crazy downhill. All right, there's people out there that bought in that market when it was like 20,000 and stuff like that. Well, sure, they're right on the fringe right now. market keeps going up and down, up and down.
Right. We never know what's going to happen.
Right. You know, all of a sudden it goes kaflooey, and we're all out there on the street looking for a piece of.
Well, that's why we got to keep looking out for each other. And that was your point about Senator Gutowski's organization. I want to thank you for reminding that. And how wonderful that here we are. We thought we were going to start out cantankerous, like, get over Game of Thrones. And truly wonderful. And thank you so much for telling us about your neighborhood of Chatham.
Oh, yeah. I have no problem out here.
Wonderful. Okay. Have a great night, Bill. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay.
Be well. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Bill, for your level-headed perspective on all manner of topics.
I know. That was wonderful. Let's take a break here and continue our conversation after the news.
Can we just talk? Can we just talk? Talk about where we're going before we get lost.
Sometimes I get so lost in the music that Vivian plays, and I'm just like,
you like them?
Yeah.
Good.
We've had a lot of listeners who like the music that you play.
I know. That's awesome.
That's Vivian, our producer this evening. John Tatey in studio on the Patty Vasquez Show. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And John Tatey is the host of Pop Mom, joined by his mother, Bonnie Tatey, mm-hmm. who we adore. What's been the, can I ask about the latest topics?
Yeah, let's see. What have we talked about recently? We talked about DuckTales.
Oh.
The modern reboot of DuckTales. Did you watch this back in the late 80s,
no.
early 90s?
No, never.
You know what it is?
It's the three ducks, right?
It's Huey, Dewey, and Louie, mm-hmm. and Scrooge McDuck. Donald also shows up some of the time. This is, I guess, for people my age, you know, sort of old millennials, let's call it. This was a touchstone series on Disney growing up, especially with its catchy theme song. And they rebooted it a couple years ago, and we talked about it on the show. Mom did not care for it, but I was pretty taken with it. I like it.
Had she watched the original because it was something you watched while you were growing up?
Okay. Yes, she was quite familiar with the original and admired it quite a bit.
So I guess for me, the difference would be like the old school Thomas the Tank Engine versus the digital creepy faced things that they do now. I don't know.
Oh, they do it digitally now?
Oh, they do it digitally now. And obviously there's different variations of it, because then you also had either Ringo or George Carlin as the conductor or the state, maybe it was a station manager. I can't remember, but
oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, there used to be live. Yeah. They were part of the show. I like that version of it. Yeah. It was all stop action stuff. And yeah.
Well, see, I have, I've strived to avoid mm-hmm. Thomas the Tank Engine. My son, Leo, my three-year-old son, is very much into trains, and we've managed to avoid the Thomas Empire thus far.
Yeah. I didn't do that. I didn't.
Yeah, because it's because of people like you. Maybe even you advised me to be careful with that stuff.
Well, because there's an emotional attachment, as we were talking about Game of Thrones and becoming emotionally attached to characters, you know. But I mean, Griffin learned a lot from the series, but I have bins of toys that could have paid for college.
That's
probably.
It. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It's all the marketing and toys around it. Speaking of my three-year-old, he and I discovered a little gem here in the city.
Yes, tell me.
I thought it's the Fine Arts Building on South Michigan. It's a little bit south of the Art Institute, 410 South Michigan, I want to say. Don't quote me on that, but it's in the 400s.
410 and South.
It is 410 South Michigan. And I had to get some sheet music. I play the piano, and I just wanted to get some sheet music, and I wanted to support a local business. And there's a sheet music place called Performers Music on the 9th floor of the Fine Arts Building. The 9th floor being a key detail, because we go in, it's this beautiful old building, and the elevators are still staffed by operators.
What?
When
I did not know that.
Not only does my son love trains, he loves elevators, and this was his first experience with someone actually. And you know, they've, you know, because they've done it for years, they just slide, it's fast, and they just slide it right in and they hit the floor exactly. Sometimes they gotta jiggle it a little bit, but I find that such a charming experience. I wish there was more of that around. I understand it's maybe not the most economical thing for a lot of buildings, but I love having the elevator operator there.
That is wonderful. I'm looking at the photos now of the Fine Arts Building.
It's beautiful, right?
At 410 South Michigan Avenue. And this is really, it's an artist studios in a historic 1885 building with Art Nouveau era murals and a vintage elevator.
So you walk around in there and you hear like the musicians practicing, and that sort of fills the halls a little bit, which I really love because I did study classical piano in college, and it reminds me of walking around in near the practice rooms and you just hear everybody working on their craft. You can get a little bit of that feeling at the Fine Arts Building, and you can ride a manually operated elevator. Maybe stop in there after your or before your trip to the Art Institute. It was a nice little corner of the city that I never knew about before.
And it's the second Friday, they have an event where you tour and shop the Fine Arts Building and tap into their world of art, music, culture, and wellness. They open their doors to the public on the evening of the second Friday of every month to connect with the community and share their work in a casual and relaxed setting. You can go to fineartsbuildingstudios.com.
That's right. That's a special event. They have sort of an open house welcoming you in, but you can go anytime.
Yes, but it's like open house, and they have photography, artwork, and all kinds of things all over the building. Well, that is really wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with us. I have to go find it.
I feel like there's a lot of little treasures around the Art Institute. There's a lot of that sort of old arty atmosphere. There's the Pritzker Military Museum, which I've always been too afraid to go into, but there's like little tiny museums and little art outcroppings around the Art Institute that I would like to explore some more. If anybody knows of stuff around that area that we could
312
secrets.
Yeah, 312-98.
Secrets.
Maybe we should do a regular segment called Chicago Secrets.
Chicago Secrets. Yes.
This is fantastic. I mean, it's one of those buildings I've heard of, but and look, there are buildings, the Chicago Cultural Center, where I've done events before, and if you have a chance to walk in there, it's also gorgeous. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they've done even the Chicago film comedy festival and things like that, that they do a great job of staying connected with the city
at the Cultural Center.
The Chicago Cultural Center.
Yep.
I need to check out the Fine Arts Building. I don't think I ever checked that out. Thank you for that, Chicago.
And this all came out of, look, I could have gotten the sheet music online, obviously.
Right.
But I just wanted to support a local business, especially the sheet music business is not exactly a booming trade.
You don't say.
And I was rewarded with this discovery. If I had just ordered it off Amazon or what have you, none of this wouldn't have had this fun afternoon with my son. So it's a point in favor of shopping locally.
Do you, and I think that I because I was on the road for many years by myself, I always found adventures wherever I went, finding new restaurants, local stores. I loved going into, my favorite thing was going into secondhand or thrift stores in other towns, because you kind of get a feel for what that community is like, what they shop for.
I like that.
Even the fashions and styles, or what was in people's homes going back for decades. So that was always my thing on the road, and finding, treasures here and there. And I think that you bring up a good point when it comes to exploring Chicago, because you're, going with your son, you're also like on an adventure for him, and it turns into one for you. And
that's right. Because I was pretty thrilled by the elevator, too, I should say. I mean, I pinned it all on Leo, but I was pretty delighted as well.
That is so sweet. Now, we're going to come back. We're going to take a break, and I want to find out if you have any recommendations for TV, because you've made my mom very happy by one of your recommendations that you made recently.
Oh, I want to hear about
this. She has enjoyed something. And I want to see if your opinions of it have changed at all since we last spoke about it.
Oh, intriguing. Okay.
Ooh, John Tate.
You got to come back for that, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. More after this. Find out what mom likes and disagrees with John on. More after this. She doesn't disagree. She just is curious of your thoughts. No, she's curious about what you think.
Your mom.
My mom,
yeah,
yes.
Got it.
312-981-7200 to join our conversation anytime. We would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200 to join us by phone or to text us. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, on 720 WGN. Joining me is John Tatey, the host of the podcast Pop Mom. Our producer this evening is Vivian Leneau.
Hello, hello.
And she's answering the phone, so be nice, as we mentioned earlier. And the fact that I have to say that means that somebody sometimes isn't.
They're all nice tonight, so kudos to you.
Yay!
All.
Yay! So maybe we do have to preface it. John Tatey often gives suggestions, and some of the things that you've suggested, I have fallen wildly in love with. Speaking of which, Wild Wild Country was one of the things I loved watching.
That's a good one.
I don't like them all, and you don't like some of mine.
Yep.
I don't know that I've ever turned you on to something, but that's okay.
You have, but I forget what it was.
That's okay. But my mom and I actually
Oh, I know what it was. The Karate Kid thing.
Oh, I really love
what
that.
What was that called? Cobra Kai?
Cobra Kai. Yeah.
That was pretty good.
I like
on
season
YouTube.
Two. Some people think that season two isn't as good.
Oh,
but
I didn't know there was a season two.
There's a season two. Yeah, I like it.
Oh, I actually did see people weren't crazy about it.
They weren't crazy about
season.
It. I enjoyed it. It's fine. I mostly was happy because a couple characters didn't come back. Like the two guys at the auto dealership.
Yeah.
They were a little over the top.
Yeah.
They tried to use them as comedic relief and they didn't need them.
That was not my favorite part of the program. Yeah.
Yeah. So John, you mentioned a few weeks ago, no, you talked about a show that you liked, but then stopped liking, which was Gentleman Jack on HBO. Right, you felt, I actually think, because I've watched the first three episodes, I haven't watched past that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's solid. I didn't go crazy for it, but my mom really enjoyed it, and she has watched every episode and feels like she just really it speaks to her for whatever reason. She's mm-hmm. enjoyed that show immensely. I really like the character. It's so funny. I mean, like what's interesting is how she walks, even how she dresses.
Yes.
Gentleman Jack is a series on HBO about a woman who led this, you know, and these are based on her true stories,
yes,
of her
it's
diaries.
An actual woman named Anne Lister who lived in Halifax, England in the 19th century. She was a landowner. She was a member of kind of a high society, but she was a real operator, and she kept diaries of her life, including long stretches that were written in code that pertained to her same-sex romantic interlude.
Yes.
So it's a great premise for a show.
Yeah.
Great material.
To see her struggle with romance and the women that she was, you know, in particular the first episode, who, you know, decide at one point they have to continue in the sort of assigned roles that they have in society.
Yeah.
And she does not respond well to it.
No, she doesn't. she follows her own path for sure. I'm delighted that I turned your mom onto the show. I can't stand it at this point. I did watch one more episode.
Was it because of the pigs? Did the pigs make you grossed out?
No, okay. That was at least something happened with the pigs and the dismemberment. But it's just, I feel like every episode is the same, and it's not even, you know, I watched the fourth episode intending to kind of laugh at it and poke fun at it, and it wasn't even fun for that anymore. It's just too right. samey for me.
Too samey.
But, hey, I'm one guy, and who's to say that I have a better opinion than Patty's mom? Certainly I do not. So
it's what floats your boat.
Kudos to her. I'm glad I turned her on to it, even if I don't like it anymore.
You gave her a boat floater. Yeah. Hey, Professor Douglas, how are you doing?
Great show, Patty. You mentioned two gems on the South Side, the Pritzker Military Academy, and of course the Fine Arts Building. Those are my two favorite buildings. Bob Pritzker, who used to be on the board for the Illinois Institute of Technology, started the Pritzker Institute of Military History and the Harold Washington Museum. And he was very interesting. He was very much of a person who wanted to support, along with other members of his family, J.P. even got involved, our governor, of establishing a place where people who wrote military books could give a symposium. And it's wonderful. You go up there, you see these people who are heroes, and you get to see what they did, and they'll present their book. And also, it's a wide open every day, you know, for the public. The kids should be up there. Going to some of these. And the other place, of course, I'm a banjo player, and I get my tablature from the Fine Arts at 410 South, a tablature on the ninth floor. They used to have an old Carl Sandburg bookstore right next to 410, in an adjacent door. I don't know if it's there. I hadn't been back there, but old books. That is a wonderful place.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're sharing your recollections and your experiences there as well. That's great.
Yeah, thanks for fleshing out the Pritzker Military Building a little for us, Professor, because I have not been in there yet.
Me neither.
Oh, you got to go.
All right.
It's great.
I will check that out. The Pritzker Military Building?
Yes, and it's on the top floor of the Harold Washington Museum, and just walk right in. People want you to come in, the kids especially.
Excellent. Oh, what a great piece of advice from you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have a
great show.
Thank you. Have a great night. And the 312 says the Fine Arts Building was the home of the Sudbaker Theater live plays and was a movie theater. Thank you, Bobby D. See?
Wow. See, they come out of the woodwork when we're sharing these secrets. You're right. We got to make it a recurring segment.
I think so. By the way, we were talking about this being my 5-year anniversary. 773, I'm not entirely sure how to take this, although they're still listening. So, but did you see this one? Did you see this one, Vivian, from the 773? 5 effing years. I just naturally disliked you because, well, you weren't Milton, but you made it 5 years with me, so congratulations, I suppose.
I'm glad you read that on the air.
thank you. It's like anything else. Nobody likes change, especially if there's someone who's familiar. You know, someday I'll be gone, I know Paul will miss me. You know, there's a couple of listeners, I think, that will. So that's, I got that. It's okay. We can still miss Milt. It's all good. And I was actually talking about this with about podcasts, and that Milt really did kind of have what I think would be more podcast like before podcasts became popular, because
really?
He would do, you know, one show on a theme or a subject and then bring in experts on it. Amy Guth does something similar as well. She's a great show on Saturday nights.
Yeah, I produce with her.
Yeah,
she's
great.
Awesome.
Exactly. So, but I got a lot of stuff. Yes. I could do one topic in over 3 hours, but I have so many things I want to talk about.
Well, me too. And speaking of great shows,
please.
What have we got? 3 minutes before the break?
Yes.
Can I slip in this?
Oh, you're so good. There you go.
That's because he was riding sidecar and holding down the fort when I was
in. I know my way around the studio. Thank you very much.
That's right. Yes.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge is the creator of a show called Fleabag. In fact, I think a few years ago I recommended it here on the show.
Well, I've heard people love this show, and then if you're not watching it, there's something wrong with you.
Well, I would never go so far as that. But the second season is back. It is streaming on Amazon. It already aired in the UK, and the second season is the final season of the show. Fleabag is about this young woman who runs a cafe. She's played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who, like I said, is the writer and creator of the show. And she has a fraught life. She's funny. She's tart. She is self-confident, but at the same time not confident at all, and uses sort of sex and comedy to sort of paper over her depression. And in the first season, it was a lot about her mourning her friend who had committed suicide, in part because of something that she did.
Okay.
And in the second season, we see her dealing with her family and extended family, who all have their own neuroses, and she's just trying to basically hold herself together amid these people. The writing on this show is so high test, so distilled. Every line does something wonderful. I just can't take my eyes off it. And whenever an episode ends, I say, oh, it's over already? I can't believe it, because you get so engrossed in it. I can't recommend more Fleabag, streaming on Amazon Prime Video.
I've written it in my calendar, my to-do list.
I think you'll enjoy it. I can't wait to hear what you think of it, Patty.
Excellent. Well, we'll find out more. Let's take a quick break here and say goodnight to our good friend John Tatey. When we come back, the news, more conversation. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show, and we are so happy that you're joining us. We are in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and those of you who've been listening to this show for the last couple of years, you know that in April of 2016, the state of Illinois cut off about $26 million to important services for citizens of the state of Illinois, all over the state, actually. Anything from Meals on Wheels to smoking cessation programs, Autism One, the Epilepsy Foundation, and that's just a handful. There were a lot of providers of important important services that started to not get paid. Actually, many of them continue to catch up. And there are ongoing ramifications from that budget crisis that the state endured for more than 2 years. And one of the incredible human beings that I met on all those journeys to Springfield was the CEO of Day One Pact, Steve Boise. Hey, Stephen, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, Patty. Pretty good. Thank you.
I got a message from you a few months ago, and it was you're in crisis. You continue to be in crisis, as do the folks that you provide services
yes,
for.
Yes, that's correct.
Tell us a little bit first, before we get into what's going on, the kind of services that you provide for in the community that you work with.
Sure. We're located in Geneva and Lyle, Illinois, and we provide what I think most people would understand as case management services to families who have children of all ages with developmental disabilities access to those services. So what we do is we screen people to assure that they meet the qualifications for services. Then we link them to different types of service providers. Maybe they're looking for a residential program, a place to stay. Maybe they're looking for a job. But we'll connect them with that provider who does that work. And then on a long-term basis, we'll monitor their care to make sure, first of all, that they're getting the services that they need. Mm-hmm. And secondly, that they're happy with those services. Because just like you and I, you know, we might hire a gardener, for example, and realize that all they're planting are dandelions, right? At which point, we'll get a new gardener. But for people with disabilities, they sometimes don't have that same voice and ability to speak for themselves. So we act as their advocate for on a long-term basis for their program satisfaction. And if they're not happy, we'll get them to a new provider. And that is a lifelong relationship as long as they're living in our area. We've served people for over 20 years.
Well, that was one of the things I was so impressed by when I first met you, was that you do provide services. You know, when Declan was born, we had a social worker come to our house, and it was overwhelming. I didn't know what we were supposed to, you know, be seeking out, what were our options, what Declan needed. And then, you know, every step of the way is sort of this start and stop. You know, you
right.
get some services and then it changes. Maybe a therapist decides to move away or something like that. And then you're kind of left hanging. And we never really had a centralized someone to be our point person for all of that.
Right.
And then when I found out, not only do you provide that kind of service that for the communities that you are working with, but that you also work all through their lives. I mean,
right.
remember when I first met you, you were talking to me about how you have some folks like maybe if Griffin ever wants to move to another state,
yes.
that they could, you would work with that family in order to maybe place someone like Declan.
Right, we would help to refer them. But
right.
we start with kids as soon as they're born. If they have an evident disability at mm-hmm. birth, a neonatal unit, if they're a preemie, we get an automatic referral, and we'll continue to work with them through age 3. And then typically during the school years, the school takes the lead on that. Mm-hmm. But certainly by the time they're 18, we're ready to go to get them into the state system and be that consistent partner, because you're absolutely right. Turnover rates for services in the community are extraordinarily high. We can become that central point of communication and stability in that family's life. And it is a lifelong issue. And I should say, we do also have one other service, and that is that we provide guardianship and trust services mm-hmm. for parents who are able to set up special needs trusts for their family member.
That's so important. And for those just joining us, we're talking to Steve Boise. He is the CEO of Day One Pact. And I am very fortunate to have another care service provider in my community who I've gotten to know better in the same way as far as going down to Springfield, talking to people. And what I'm struck by, first of all, is how many people don't necessarily understand how crucial the services you provide or coordinate are, not just for the families and the individuals who receive them, but for the community at large. That's something that I
right.
try to, because a lot of people, you know, my listeners know that there have been nights when people get mad at me. They're like, oh, here you are asking for the state to give you money. That's not what it's about, is it?
No, it isn't. From my perspective, it's about helping families, and more importantly, individuals with disabilities, to live fully engaged lives. That's what every parent wants mm-hmm. for their child. That's what every individual wants, to whatever degree they're capable of expressing that. People want to be involved with others. It's not just going to school, but it's developing friendships, building lifelong relationships, beginning a skill set. And then once you graduate from school, it is finding your place in the world, because we all want to find our place in the world.
Right.
And every parent wants to know that their child has a place in this world. I know I'm speaking touchy-feely words, but I'm a parent.
Yeah, I mean all the feels. Get me in all the feels. And would we prefer that, one, that there was no need for the services that you provide, or that we lived in a world where things were easy and everyone understood or was tolerant or accepting of the community, that there was an easier path?
Sure.
Of course.
Sure.
No one is looking to take advantage of anything. But when you invest in people, and this is something I heard Senator Dan Katowski say on the floor of the General Assembly, when you invest in people, you save lives. And that's what we're talking about.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, we're experiencing, I think, a major shift in how we conceptualize services for people with developmental disabilities. 60 years ago, 70 years ago, we thought of institutionalization. Well, we'll just have them go to a state-operated facility, and they'll be taken care of, and they'll be safe. 30 years ago, we talked about, well, let's set up these group homes, and they'll all go to a daycare center during the day or a workshop, and everybody will be happy. But, you know, today's generation of parents and individuals who've been mainstreamed all their life in school, that ain't enough. To use a vernacular. You know, they want more. They want a real full life. Now, that may not mean a 40-hour-a-week job, but it will mean going out into the community, going to the coffee shop, seeing a movie, working at the library for a couple of days a week, a variety of things, just like any of us would like.
And for those individuals that do go on to work, in order to get to that point, you need to have everything in place to help them reach their potential. And if they're not, you also, you know, psychologically, it is better for everyone involved, whether it's their families, the neighbors, you know, and you forget how much of an impact individuals like the people that you care for, the people that I know in my life, in particular, Declan. He has an impact on our community. Like when we go to we miss church, people will tell me and Steve, like, you weren't here last week. We really missed having you here. People, it makes a difference.
Right. Yeah. There's a hole that isn't being filled. It is amazing. We often think about how relationships are developed and how that person has an impact. And some people think that people with disabilities don't impact us that way.
Right.
There's nothing further from the truth. It's not just an opportunity to be, in my vernacular, to be a blessing to that person, but how that person can be a blessing to you.
Mm-hmm.
It is a mutual blessing association.
It is the biggest gift I have received as being the mother of Declan, besides his love and that look I get in his eyes where he looks like he has a crush on me, but he can't say, you know, I love you, mommy, because he cannot speak.
Right.
And I don't even, you know, I don't know intellectually what words he knows, understands, or you know, what that means to him.
Right.
But, you know, yesterday, he was holding my hands and squeezing my fingertips and looking at me longer than he has, you know, forever. And it takes my breath away.
He was speaking to you.
No doubt about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree completely. And for, you know, so many families to be in jeopardy, which is why you're in tonight.
Yeah.
I should have been having you on more regularly so we could talk about all the great events that you used to have. And we're going to let the audience know why some of those have come to an end.
Okay.
And how they can perhaps get involved and what steps you and other organizations are taking to protect families and help them reach their potential and have access to the kind of life, as you mentioned, anything that we all dream of having, which is being connected,
absolutely,
being as independent as possible. We are talking to Steve Boise. He is the CEO of Day One Pact. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show on 720 WGN. Our conversation continues after this break. You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, and I am hanging out in the Allstate Skyline Studio with CEO of Day One Pact, Steve Boise, and we met several years ago, and we obviously have a lot of mutual, appreciation for the kind of work that you do, and that my ability to at least inform people, share the stories of, you know, the community that so desperately needs to be. We're not asking for handouts. We're talking about fundamental rights when it comes to being treated with respect and dignity.
Opportunity.
Yeah.
That's what all of us want, right? We want a fair shot at becoming who we are and finding our place in the world. It isn't about, dig deeper for another 10 cents.
Right.
It's about, hey, I think I could do that job. Would you give me a chance? And maybe I'll need a little help. But you know what? Most of us need help one way or another. And the joy that can bring, anytime you see somebody succeeding at something that they love doing, I think we all respond in a positive way. We say, wow, what a great opportunity.
Right. And that takes a lot of work from the family, from the support services. And I hesitate to bring this up, but what always comes up for me are the most tragic stories that remind me of how important this is.
Yeah.
The audience knows that I've talked about a mother in California who took the life of her 4-year-old son because all the money that she, her family had spent on autism services didn't work, and she was planning on taking her own life. Right. And I called you one day, not long after the tragedy that struck your community. There were there were siblings who were living in a group home. On the weekends, they would go home to their parents. They were adult children in there. Well, they were adults in their 50s, but they were the parents. The mother was terminally ill, and the father, on one of their breaks home, took all four of their lives.
That's correct.
And that's the extreme case of what I mean when people lose hope and the support, or thinking that there's nothing they could do. And without services and the help and the community that you have, a lot of families would be lost. And now you are in jeopardy of not being able to be there for so many people. Tell us what's going on.
It's a long story that I'll make short. About a year and a half ago, in the previous governor's administration, we began to hear talk about the desire on the part of the state to consolidate some of our services. There are currently 17 agencies like ours across the state. And as you may remember, the state was having some fiscal issues at that time. So one of the thoughts was, well, if we cut down on the number of agencies, we'll save money. And so that started some discussion in state government on how to do that. And they made it a boarded attempt to start this over a year ago, and then they couldn't figure out how they wanted to do those grants, and they stopped. But then this past summer, they actually did release a new grant opportunity. And at that point in time, they and this gets a little confusing, so I'll try not to make it too...
Well, you're in the thick of it, so I understand that you've got all this going on. Go ahead.
So they released this, it's called a NOFO, Notice of Funding Opportunity. It's basically a grant opportunity. And it was going to reduce the number of areas from 17 to 12 across the state. And all of us had the opportunity to bid on these contracts. This was a...
So I'm going to ask questions during the way. So when you say reduce the agencies from 17 to 12, that means that 12 agencies would now be responsible for much bigger areas to provide services?
By and large, some areas were untouched. The way that they consolidated the areas was interesting. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Some in Chicago had their geographic
areas.
It
was a little cockamamie. Do you want to say cockamamie?
Yeah, okay, cockamamie. That's a good word, too. Good right. old-fashioned word. Screwy. Maybe
there
that's the word I'd use.
Hey, I like that.
Okay, that's sure. over the air, right? Okay. So they released this, and this was the first time they'd ever bid it out in almost 30 years. So those of us who've been in the business for quite a while, we had expressed some concerns over the construction of this grant proposal and what they were asking for, but it's state government, so you really can't fight it at that point. So we bid on it, as a number of other agencies did, and on January 2nd of this past year, we were informed that we had not won the bid for our area. It was interesting because they couldn't find our email address. They had to call us. After 3 years, they still hadn't.
And that makes you think, well, how well organized is this process?
I think that's a fair question that someone would have. Right. So at that point, we were devastated, to be certain. What was interesting that none of us expected was that the state, at the time it released the results of this decision, they also released the scoring sheets for the decision, which they said they weren't going to do. And as we began to dig into those scoring sheets, we discovered some discrepancies in the pattern of scores, because we saw them for the whole state. That led us to question the accuracy of the whole process. But we don't really have a way of appealing that. There was an appeal process that we did pursue, but all the appeal would do was to look at whether or not the state followed its procedures, you know, when it released the NOFO, when it scored it, when it made the decision. So it's more a process review.
Okay.
At that point, a few of us as agencies who had lost our contracts wondered, what do we do? Because this is going to change the system entirely. Families that we worked with for 20 years, it's going to be a major change for them. So we began to think, what other rights, what other course of action could we take? And that's when we started to work with an agency downstate to pass a bill in the Illinois House of Representatives to stop this process from occurring. That was Illinois House Bill 844. We worked with Representative Jay Hoffman in the East St. Louis area. And this bill was passed out of the House committee on a unanimous vote to go before the full House. and we were able to obtain over 1,200 witness slips.
And let people know why that's important, because I think that a lot of our listeners perhaps don't understand the process of making sure that when, and that's why we talk about Springfield and the process,
right.
is that you can be involved. If there's something that's important to you, you can add your name to a witness
right.
list.
Any bill that is before the House or Senate for passage has the opportunity for the public to say whether they agree with it or they don't, whether they support it or oppose it. That's called a witness slip. Now, if you look at the average number of witness slips for your average bill, let's say we want to rename the Chicago River the Mayor Daley River, for example, that probably wouldn't, well, maybe that would get a lot of witness slips, but the average witness slip count is probably 40 or 50. It's not a what I would call a heater bill.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Gun control, which was another bill under consideration, got over 1,000 witness slips, at least the last time I checked. We got over 1,200 witness slips. That is a huge amount.
Right. Okay.
It was the second most of any bill that I went through them all this past spring.
And a lot of those folks are families, I'm guessing,
absolutely.
In the community.
It's not just professionals.
Right.
In fact, the majority of people are family members
right.
who said, no, we don't want this change to occur. We don't think it's the right time. We don't think it's being handled. Well, a number of reasons. And we want this to stop. And that's what that bill was going to accomplish. On the last day of the House session before their spring break, unfortunately, the legislator did not call the bill for a final vote.
Was there any reason why Representative Homan that he gave as to why the bill wasn't called? Did he say, you know, we're going to get to this later, or has it been shelved permanently?
It has been put back into committee, and that's all I know at this point.
Okay, so it's in committee. All right, yeah. I'm just trying to figure out who to call.
So at that point, we decided that we couldn't wait for the legislature to make a decision. And
because in the meantime, you're not able to...
We're on a countdown to losing our funding
right.
of $3 million and losing services for over 4,000 people in our area. And services that, without sounding too proud, but I am proud of my agency. I'm proud of my staff. We have one of the best agencies in the state, if you look at it from a statistical standpoint.
Well, and the people that I know that receive services or have worked with you, I hear nothing but amazing things. That's why I told you. I was like, I don't know if I can move to Lyle, but I would think about it just to be able to work with Pact One.
Yeah, yeah. We've had a great staff.
My apologies. Yeah.
And so we got together with two other agencies downstate, and we filed a lawsuit. This lawsuit is modeled after another lawsuit that was filed by the agency in East St. Louis. And we felt this was the only way to go to try and stop this.
Right.
And as we met with our attorneys, we discovered there was Medicaid law involved here also.
Let's tease our audience with another segment and find out about Medicaid law and the impact that it might have on Day One Pact and other organizations like them. It's not just Day One Pact. It's not just because I'm friends with the CEO of Day One Pact, Steve Boise. But we'll find out more when we come back. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. We're so happy you're here. You are listening to The Patty Vasquez Show, and we are in the Allstate Skyline studio with the CEO of Day One Pact, Steve Boise, and we've been talking about the services that are in jeopardy for so many people in the community of Western Suburbs, but not just for the people that you serve in
That's
Lyle
correct.
And Warrenville and places like that, but this is really going to affect people all over the state, isn't it?
It's statewide, absolutely. As we were talking about earlier, a group of agencies decided to come together to file a lawsuit because we all faced similar situations. So the two agencies, one is Western Illinois Service Coordination, which is out of the Macomb area,
mm-hmm.
and then Central Illinois Service Access, which is based in Lincoln, Illinois. Altogether, we're serving about 6,000 people a year in close to 20 counties.
Before we go on and talk about Medicaid and the impact that's having, I want to let folks know who live in those communities that this is important to you. And this is anybody who lives in Illinois.
Right.
But I also don't want to scare anybody about losing their services. However, I don't know what to say. Where do they stand if they hear about this?
To lose services. And you're right. I don't want to misstate the situation. all these services are being transferred to new agencies.
Right.
And I know all the executive directors, and they're all fine people.
I know that you try to be a little humble about the work that you do. When you disrupt the continuation of the way things go, it is such chaos for a family that is already living in a state of emergency.
Yes.
We're talking about anybody who maybe has a baby that was born medically fragile. Maybe you have a child who was involved in an accident, now has a disability. Maybe you have an adult child who is unable to live independently. This is a whole wide range of individuals throughout the state of Illinois who
right.
It's about support. It's not about propping people up or giving them handouts. This is about taking care of our most vulnerable. This is how we say who we are as Illinoisans.
Right. And ensuring that continuity of care is continued. You know, it's really interesting when you contrast what the state has done in two different systems. So on the one hand, the early intervention system, which provides services to kids from 0 to 3.
It's intense. Let me tell you, that's intense stuff.
It is intense stuff.
Yeah, it's important, yes.
And we do a fabulous job in that, not just the state, but our agency. However, there are 25 agencies that provide these services statewide. Those services were just rebid this past September. The state did not make one change to the number of coordination entities across the state. The state said, no, we need the 25 because that allows for local granularity, a connection to local areas. And yet, a different division of the same department, Department of Human Services, says, no, we need fewer service coordination agencies for the adults.
Oh, no. That I mean,
the inconsistency is indefensible as far as I'm concerned.
Because there's so much less once a child leaves
right.
the high school system. Like, for example, Declan will graduate from his program when he's 21 years old.
Right.
And then, what do you do? And
you'd be on the waiting list.
Well, and I'll be older. And taking care of an adult at that point who
right.
most likely, which is one of the reasons why I haven't done CrossFit in a while, but it was to stay strong because I'm going to need assistance at some point in my life.
Well, Patty, I don't think most people realize that there are still close to 19,000 people on the waiting list for services post-high school age.
Right.
Now, sometimes people will say, well, if we had the old state hospitals back, we wouldn't have the waiting
list.
Right,
you just dump them there.
Right. But the state closed them for a variety of reasons, not the least of which the Supreme Court said you can't do it anymore. And what the state has done has not followed through. Now, this is my high horse here.
Yeah, get up.
It has not followed through on its responsibility to ensure that those services are there for people. The state is in an ongoing lawsuit with the federal government, and they are aiming to get people off the waiting list within 5 years. But think about saying that to a family that comes to us for the first time. Their child's just turned 21, and they say, well, my son's graduating in June. What can we do for him? Because school's ending. And we say, well, we'll put you on the waiting list, and in about 5 years, you'll get services.
I cannot emphasize this enough. If you know someone in your community that has a child, a family has a child with a disability, please talk to them about getting on the PUNS list
Absolutely.
As soon as possible.
Every high school in this state knows how to refer you to the local case management agency that will get you on the PUNS list.
And for those who don't know, PUNS stands for the Prioritization for the Urgency of Needs and Services.
Right.
Do you see me close my eyes trying to remember? I was like,
only government. Only government can come up with a title like that.
Illinois in particular.
Well, it actually came from Pennsylvania. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so we can blame them.
I had to close my eyes so I could see the letterhead from all the mail I get from them as far as you have to call in and check in and you have to update your information. And we've done that since Declan was born because I ran into somebody who urged me to do this so that when he ages out of the system, he will hopefully have some support.
Right.
So I cannot urge this enough. Anyway, so let's make sure that we talk about Medicaid and the role that plays in Day One Pact and the agencies like
Medicaid is what funds the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
Federal dollars allow for this funding to occur. You know, under Medicaid law, a person has to reside in a nursing home, but there's something called a waiver that allows people to get those federal dollars to be used for community services. And that is the lifeline for all services throughout the state.
Right.
And what that means then is that the state has to follow Medicaid regulations. It can't just apply decisions and write policies willy-nilly and ignore that. And that's part of what our lawsuit is getting at, that we believe, as we've talked about this with our attorneys, that the state did not follow Medicaid regulation in bidding this out. That's why we're suing in federal court.
So how do people get involved if they want to know? First, they want to know more about Day One Pact, because you are providing services. You will continue to do so until otherwise.
Absolutely. Until July 1st for that program. Early intervention will continue to do.
Right. But. So how do people get a hold of you? And if they want to help, maybe they want to reach out and connect with you directly. How do they reach you?
Well, the easiest way is to, first of all, go to our website, which is dayonepact.org.
Is it spelled out one or is it the number one?
O-N-E.
O-N-E.
D-A-Y-O-N-E. PACT.org.
Excellent. And then you mentioned calling their legislators.
Right. That was what I was going to say next.
Or maybe you told me that off the air. Or I just, in my head, I'm always telling people to call their legislators.
At this point, while that House bill is not moving, it's not dead. And they could call their legislators and say, hey, we want you to move on House Bill 844. That would be helpful.
Okay. So House Bill 844.
Right.
And this is the folks that are going to have their lives disrupted. It's so hard for me to explain because it's not tangible. And I don't want people to know what it's like. This is not something I would wish on anybody.
Right, exactly.
As I mentioned, you know, my family has been in a state of emergency since the moment Declan was born. And sometimes you come up for air and then you find out about stories like this. I still continue to contend that there are families that will suffer for years as a result of what happened over the last few years when it came to financing, providing
the system hasn't recovered from the budget battles that we saw over the last few years. And I know that the new administration is attempting to remedy that, but it can't be remedied immediately.
I wish I knew someone who knew the governor. Wait a minute. I know something. But here's the thing. It's not like a wave of the wand necessarily, but it's a fundamental need to look at this and go, well, why are you just arbitrarily changing the rules or even sort of putting it to the side in a disorganized way?
Right. And why are you changing things that aren't really working to get more people into services? There are two major issues that face this state with regard to how we care for people with developmental disabilities. That first issue is getting people into services.
Right.
Everything else is a moot issue until you get into services. But then the second issue is paying for those services adequately. We need people who have disabilities often need support staff. Mm-hmm. And if you're only going to pay them $10 an hour, in an economy like ours, you're not going to get staff.
Well, and that was the tragedy of that story that the Chicago Tribune had written 2 years ago about caregivers that were leaving people basically tied in their beds in their own feces. Yeah. There was one patient who was beaten to death because he stole a cookie.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not because they were paid low. It's because they weren't able to recruit people who were better qualified and could handle the job. It's a high-stress job, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So. I always hesitate. I get such, it's not a lot of backlash I get from listeners, but it's the anger that I get from some folks. And I'm sure you have experienced this as well. And I don't know, I've asked people to listen with love, but some people simply won't. They hear the financial part. And again, and it's not just that when you invest in people, you save lives, but it is also an investment in the future. The more we do sooner, the less expensive it will actually be. I don't want my son to be a burden on anybody. I wish that I didn't need help. I don't have the sort of resources that it takes to take care of this beautiful life in my home. You know, so
or wherever the next step will be,
whatever the next step is. Yeah. So let's help CBOYSA and the folks with Day One Pact, you know, make a brighter day for so many people in the community. Get involved, call your legislator, let them know that HB 844 is important to you. Is there a place where there's information about this situation specifically?
If you go to our website, we're going to have some of it on there soon.
Okay.
I've been busy.
I understand.
In a lawsuit, I haven't had it done yet. But
PattyVasquez.com went away somehow because I wasn't paying attention, so I still have to build a new website. So
my email is on there. Anybody has questions, you can email me at S, like Steve, Boise, B-O-I-S-S-E, at dayonepact.org.
Thank you so much. And not just for coming in tonight, but for always doing so much for the people who need it the most.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN.
Tell me something good. Tell me that you love me.
We are winding down, about ready to turn the station over to Nick D. And I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. We'll be back tomorrow night. Dr. Kathy Tynes from Northwestern Medicine will be joining us for Wellness Wednesday. And looking forward to a great conversation with her. I am jumping in the car right after the show. I have to drive to Pontiac, Illinois.
Where is that?
It's about 2 hours from here.
Why?
I am going to be speaking to a group of individuals who provide services for disabled in the community.
Not tonight.
Tomorrow afternoon.
Okay.
So this is what I do sometimes. And I've done this because there are so many great groups across the state of Illinois. And I've actually done this in Michigan, Wisconsin. I do a keynote address or I speak to a group. It's almost a performance. But I tell the story about how Declan was born, what happened, the sort of chaos that ensued, and what that experience, what that adventure has been like. And so that medical professionals, caregivers can sort of get the parents' view and how that, you know, how words land. Because, you know, when Declan was born, they told us that because he was on a ventilator, he wasn't responding to a lot of stimuli, he wasn't breathing on his own. The neurologist, after a few days, we'd gone in because they kept saying, you know, Declan can go home in 3 days, Declan can go home in a week. A week turned into 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, Steve and I went into the neurologist's office and we asked, you know, do you have an idea of, because we were kind of led to believe that everything seemed to be going okay.
Wow.
And we went into the neurologist's office and we said, do you happen to know when you think Declan can be sent home? And he said, well, I'll be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure he's going to survive.
Oh, man.
And if he does, I don't know that he will progress past the intellectual ability of a 2-year-old, if he'll ever walk, if he'll ever talk. And I didn't expect that. There was no indication leading, you know, obviously, yes, he was born medically fragile, but we were sort of led to believe that they weren't sure what had happened. Which to us, the bigger picture seemed to be that they didn't know what had happened, why he was struggling, why he wasn't necessarily responding in the first few days.
Right.
But it seemed like he was starting to get better. They had him just on oxygen. And when the doctor told us, when the neurologist told us that all these things that he might never do, I and Steve, we were both completely overwhelmed and we were blindsided. And that's sort of what I talk about is, you know, the language that we use. He had put me in a world of nevers, and that's an impossible place to live. So I tell the story of, you know, the kind of support that it has taken for us to survive. And there was one night, and this is what I share, is I actually lost the ability to speak while Declan was in the hospital. It was my birthday in August, and he had been in the hospital for about 18 days, because my birthday's on August 17th. And so he, maybe it was more than 18 days, but I was standing in the shower and I could not speak. I was so overwhelmed with the anxiety, the fear. I had Googled all the things that had happened to Declan in the first few days of his life and seen all these things that were scary. And then the neurologist said that those fears were, you know, fairly accurate. And then I couldn't speak that. I just, you know, for me.
Yeah.
I couldn't talk. I was having a massive anxiety attack, panic. And, you know, one of the things that when a mother delivers a baby that's medically fragile, there, at least at the hospital we were in, there wasn't any sort of precaution or, I don't know how to put it, no steps taken to see how my mental health was. Because when you deliver a child with special needs with medical issues, for me, the first thing they started doing was like, are you sure you were 38 weeks pregnant? Did you take any medications? All these, and it comes at you like that as though, you know, you start wondering, did I do something wrong? And you start going over in your mind.
Oh,
and,
gosh.
And I know I've spoken to a lot of special needs moms fear, that worry takes a long time to dissipate, that you think that you did something wrong. I mean, everything. I wondered if I had worked too much, you know, because I was doing stand-up comedy and I was still traveling. Did I shake too many hands? Maybe I caught a virus.
Yeah, you doubted yourself.
Oh, did I not wait long enough between the boys? They're only, you know, they're like 23 months apart. Although, I mean, obviously people have healthy kids closer together. I'm also Rh negative. I wondered if I, you know, should I have had more than one child, because I have to take extra booster shots in order to make sure that the baby survives. And that's something we'll talk about some other time. But
yeah,
so here I was living in the world of never, and you can't function from never. And it took a long time, but this happened Declan was probably 4 or 5 months old, and we still didn't know the extent to which, and he didn't get his diagnosis until he was almost 3 years old, which was a corpus callosum disorder. He's missing part of his brain, and all the tests, they didn't know what they were looking for, and finally they came back around. But there was a night where I just wanted to disappear. I didn't want to exist because I just couldn't be this parent. I kept imagining the rest of my life. I remember thinking, man, I see other families like this. I've never known how they do it.
It's just nothing you can prepare for.
No.
You can't prepare for that.
No, never imagining that he would never, at first, because they told us he would never walk, and thinking of, I didn't know what that meant, and the idea that he might never say mommy, he might,
right.
And then you go beyond that, you think, well, then he's never going to, basically what he had told us was that our baby might live in a vegetative state, right? And that was the first thing that we thought, and that's true, and that happens, and you go, okay, I've always wondered, how does this happen? Here I am, and thinking about him never going to school and never falling in love and never, never graduating from grade school or high school or college, and it was really hard. So one night I was just lying in the dark thinking, like, how do I do this? I don't want to be this mom. And everyone was asleep and my husband was snoring. And Declan was in the bassinet next to me, and he woke up and he started crying, and I picked him up and I was able to breathe. Like, I didn't realize that I wasn't breathing. Like, I just was holding my breath every night and sort of disappearing into the darkness. But when I held him, I felt better. And whatever you believe in the universe, whether it's God or grace or Allah or, whatever higher power you believe in, I believe in something greater than us, because as I was holding Declan, I had this moment of pure grace where I realized that I was living in a world of nevers, and I was worried about all the things that he couldn't do. But if I could start to love all the things that he could do, that I could function from there. And believe me, I have my nights when I slip back, and I start worrying about his future. But that's where we were able to move forward. Steve and I, and Steve, man, what an incredible father. I remember one time when we were at one of our lowest, and you just try to like rise to the occasion. You try to be the best person you are, much less a mom. And Steve came in one day. I was doing something. I was on the ground, and Steve came in and gave me a hug. And he goes, "Every day you make me want to be a better man." And that's what it takes.
Is
that kind of support? It was. And poor Steve, I use it as a punchline in one of my shows, but it's about how, like, he knows whatever it is, Steve instinctually drifts toward just being in the right place at the right time for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you need in your life. And imagine if I didn't have him. The divorce rate for parents who have children with disabilities is about, they say, anywhere between 73% and 82%. It's very high. A lot of the families that I know that have an individual with disabilities, it's often a single parent or divorced parents, because when your life doesn't turn out the way you wanted it to, it's hard to come back and make everything okay, right? You think
mm-hmm.
of all, like I said, that night when I thought of all the nevers, and that happens to people and they don't move on from there. I don't think that parents who have a child with a disability or anybody, you're not allowed to grieve the life that you imagined, that you dreamt for yourself.
Right.
And that was the hardest part. And I want caregivers to know that they are the ones, this is why I go speak to the groups, is that I don't know, aside from Steve, my mom, and my incredible little boy, Griffin, and the community that I am in, the caregivers, the therapists, the doctors, the nurses, the teachers at Declan's school from the moment he was in preschool, without them, I can't imagine every day. And I want them to hear the thank yous.
Absolutely.
I bet you do this sometimes. People say thank you, and just like you say things like, oh, it's my job. And this is true of anybody in any walk of life, whatever it is you do. When someone says thank you, they don't have to say thank you.
Right.
You hear it. Hear the thank yous.
Accept the thank yous.
And let it land.
Yeah,
appreciate
why
where it's coming from, because there is someone that is grateful. And I, from the aides on Declan's bus, the people who serve him lunch, the one-on-one aide who makes sure he's safe every single day, I couldn't do it without them. And that's why I speak to groups like the ones, folks I'll talk to tomorrow in Pontiac. If you want to know more about what I do or a little bit more about my story with Declan, you can go to withkindwords.com. And people are like, well, I've heard you talk. You don't always sound kind. And that's kind of the point, to remember to come back to it. right? To there are days when we get frustrated and everything seems overwhelming, but that's why we end every show with "Tell me something good." So my something good is that I'm honored to be joining the folks in Pontiac who are there for the people in their community. So that's my something good, and I want to thank so many of the guests that we had tonight. And I didn't mean to go on and on. I didn't know I was going to tell you that story.
No, thank you for sharing that. I think it was great.
Well, thank you very much. So that is, and my something good is working with you, Vivian.
Yeah, likewise, lovely. Patty. Yeah.
We get to hang out with Dr. Tynus tomorrow night. Tell me something good, Vivian, now that I let me wipe the tears off of the microphone cover.
What do I say now? Well, I'll tell you something good. The end of May is a lot of birthdays. We have a lot of birthdays in the family.
Wonderful.
My mom's birthday is on Memorial Day.
Hey!
And my boyfriend's birthday is on the 29th of May. So, and today is my boyfriend's mom's birthday, so I mean we're talking about a bunch of Geminis in the house, and you know, so I want to wish them all a early happy birthday for my boyfriend and my mom, and also happy birthday today for George's mother.
Oh, wonderful!
Yeah,
happy birthday to all around to all those folks. How are you celebrating with your mom? Nice dinner.
So actually, she might be listening. So
oh, so
I
never
don't want to give it away.
Never mind. All right, that is.
But it will be something special. She's turning 60.
Hey,
yeah, the Mom-Z. Big 6-0.
How does she feel about it?
She feels like in between of good and oh my god, I'm aging.
Oh boy.
It's right in the middle.
It is when you stop and think about it. You know? So
But Mama, you look great.
Yay.
If you're listening, you look great, Mom.
What's Mama's name?
Demetra. Very Greek name.
It is. Yeah. Is she goddess Demetra? I can't think of all my goddesses and characters and all
the books. There's Athena.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All these things.
I do.
Yes.
I do. My goodness. My Greek school teacher's going to be so upset with me right now.
I didn't mean to throw a quiz at you during something good. But Demetra is a beautiful name, and we all wish happy birthday to Demetra, as well as your boyfriend's mother.
Yes.
And your boyfriend's. Wait. Who?
Yes. And my boyfriend. Yeah, George.
That's a lot of birthdays.
Oh, my God. Too many.
That is too many.
All in May.
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, my whole family is like that, too. That's Griffin, Steve, Declan, and I actually all have our birthdays within about 32 days of each other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it happens. It's kind of a cluster we're drawn together.
Go.
Well, Vivian, have a wonderful evening.
You do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Everyone be well. Hope that you're happy, healthy, and safe wherever you are tonight. We're so glad you joined us.